Minnesota then was grassroots. You could see the origins of so many things that were present. The people working in the book kind of start with the grain elevators. And very close to the University of Minnesota, especially in the fall when I first came, as it is now, you could smell flax. It just permeated whole parts of the town. You were curious about these large, quiet buildings and what they did. And that was the beginnings of this grassroots search to see where people worked, how they worked, what the fields turned out and brought together. And then the entire enterprise that grows out of the natural planting and harvesting, which becomes stock exchanges, or the grain exchange, the entrepreneurship. And that is something of the deep that goes on in the book. From there, I went to South St. Paul and saw the stockyards and worked there for many, many years. I suppose it's sort of a blue-collar search that I was making.
Well, I was going to mention your book, Jerome Liebling, The Minnesota Photograph, is filled with portraits of what many people would consider ordinary people. And I'm wondering how you managed to hone in on that as your subject matter, or did it choose you?
I think it chose me, or I don't know if I can properly answer that, the chicken and the egg, what happened. I'm sure that if we do some personal analysis, I'd find that I was interested in so-called common, humane enterprise, that thing which is closest to us, which is the everyday, the ordinary, which I think is very, very important. We've given special attention to another order of entertainment and stars and almost fictional lives, and I'm concerned about that thing which all of us pass through and touch, and that there's a sublime and a special respect that I have, which is ordinary, but which I think I sometimes push to heights of importance.
The book also has some photographs of some famous Minnesota politicians. There's a wonderful photograph of Hubert Humphrey and Eugene McCarthy at what looks to be a sporting event.
Yes, Fritz Mondale, later to be Vice President of the United States, but then he was just Fritz Mondale, and he had just graduated law school and was running the campaign of Waldo Freeman in 1958. He was looking for a photographer to help in the campaigning, and another friend of his was a friend of mine and said, "Oh, get in touch with this guy, Jerry Liebling. I think he might help." And he did call me, and a friendship between us started then in 1958 when he was running the campaign, and I found that I was excited about chasing the politicians, often doing photographs that I was interested in, but mostly I was attempting to make pictures for them, how they looked, what they did, what they needed, little brochures, often with family members. And that's how I started. I had such entree, at least through the Democrats, and then in the state, that I continued photographing for many years politicians who came through. And I think there are photographs of Wallace and Truman and Kennedy. Mm-hmm. The politicians were important. I was trying to see, take a measure of a particular person. Could I, through a photograph, give some insight, as much as a photograph might be able to do, to who they were and what they were about?
What do you think is the historical importance to your photographs?
We start the book with a photograph of a man in a coal yard. And when that photograph was taken in 1951, as so many of these pictures date from that period, it wasn't shown in Minneapolis until 1995, many years later. The picture was reproduced in the newspaper, and the man's daughter saw the photograph of her father and rushed to the Minneapolis Institute of Art where the picture was shown, and then wrote to me a letter saying that you've brought my father to life. I'm not going to read the letter. It's reproduced in the book. It was written by Alice Salick. But she said, my father was such a wonderful, hardworking man. There seemed to be no recognition to his life except for the family and their feelings about him. And now I saw him on the walls of the Minneapolis Institute of Art. And the show then traveled to London. And she further said, my father never traveled anywhere, and you have sent him to London. And I was so touched by that, and to feel that I had in some way encapsulated his life just for a moment. Now, this book is published by the Minnesota Historical Society, and of course what the society stands for is the sense that all of the life, all of that past, all of our history indeed penetrates whatever we do today.
You have the book of photographs and, of course, the photographs themselves, but you also must have a legion of students who studied under you. You taught at the University of Minnesota from 1949 to 1969, so that is quite a legacy to have as well.
It's interesting, the significance of being in school and the memories you have. Every day the newspapers are filled with stories. The school's failing. Why can't we, the young people, read? What are they learning? Let's change the system. Certainly nobody says, don't bring us all together in these formative years. And since I was at the university level, I think everybody carries throughout their life, if they have an opportunity to go to college, the thought that, yes, I went to so-and-so, and I went here, and this is what happened to me, and these are the connections. So that it's a very important moment in our lives, that coming together, that touching, that socializing, and then the career choices made because of what we've studied.
Do you think you can teach photography, or must the student have a certain talent before they come to you?
Oh, but your questions are so penetrating, and whether we're teaching or not, there's a body of knowledge concerning so many subjects. You at least get that information out. In the arts, in photography, you're talking, it was a term used called visual literacy. Certainly you know that within a year or two, their language is better. They know the references, so that there is teaching and there is knowledge. Whether you make everyone an important photographer, I certainly didn't succeed all the way, but every once in a while I did.
What's it like to be back in Minnesota? You're in Minnesota this weekend at the Historical Society and, of course, telling people about your book.
Yes. Minnesota, at least Minneapolis, where I lived, has changed so vastly. My photographs, I started to say, talk about a grassroots, an ability to see the horizon, to feel the horizon. And that was present even in Minneapolis and certainly St. Paul, in the cities. They were small towns. There was a sense of the small town. If you can imagine that when I photographed the skyline of Minneapolis, the largest building was the Fauché Tower. Since then, Minneapolis is and St. Paul, to some extent, has taken on a new veneer. They wanted, I think, to hide the grassroots. They wanted to become part of what they thought was a larger international appearance. And so the downtown of Minneapolis has just transformed. All of these new buildings represent logos for companies one after the other. I wouldn't dare to try to talk about whether it's better or worse, but Minneapolis has pushed a new image of itself. It's adapted an image rather than relying what I felt was really its own importance. So the changes are tremendous.
Jerome Liebling, if people want to see the grassroots of Minnesota, they can certainly turn to your book, Jerome Liebling, The Minnesota Photographs. Thanks so much for coming in and telling us your story and telling us about your wonderful book.
Thank you very much.